Welcome to the Orgasmic Lifestyle Podcast by Venus O'Hara. I'm here to welcome you into the world of orgasmic living by hosting experts to discuss orgasmic topics such as nutrition, spirituality, personal development, sexuality, and much more. Here, we will offer lifestyle lessons that can help you lead a fulfilling, joyous, and orgasmic lifestyle. I'm your guide, Venus O'Hara. Welcome to episode 75 of the Orgasmic Lifestyle Podcast with Venus O'Hara. In this new moon episode, we'll be discussing unity consciousness. We'll be speaking with Connor Keyes, a spiritual guide. I also review the book The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. The episode ends with a guided meditation with affirmations for unity consciousness. But first, let me share with you my opinion and experience with unity consciousness. If you've been following this podcast, you'll know that I have a set of standard questions that I ask all of my guests. And they are, for those who are unfamiliar with your work, could you tell us what you do? And that question I ask so that the person in question can actually answer in their own words what they do, because often my guests have very diverse interests and it's not just one thing that they are doing. So I allow them to speak in their own terms about what they do and what they want to focus on. I also ask them what inspired them to follow this path. And that's a great question to kind of understand the journey behind what led them to do what they do. And then I kind of go into some more questions that are customized according to the guest in question. And for example, things that I found on their website, on their social media, books or TED Talks, whatever. And I might find about four or five questions from their content or even their Media One sheet. And I prepare these questions literally just half an hour before I get on the call. And then at the end, I ask what they're working on now, what's the book that changed their life, and what's the quote they live by, and where people can find them. So my interviews have a kind of set order, let's say. So I had some questions ready for our guest today following this this protocol that I've created that has worked really well for me so far. Often the guests always say to me, oh, that's such a good question. And I'm always really flattered because I think if only you knew how little preparation there was behind this. I kind of feel some kind of Catholic guilt. Some part of me thinks you have to suffer to get results, which of course is not correct. But anyway, when I got on the call with Connor the first time, he asked me, what questions do you have for me? I told him the questions that I had. And then he said to me, I don't want to talk about any of that. And it really threw me off. At first, I was thinking, who is this guy? And and it was late at night and I wasn't really in the mood for creating some deep philosophical questions to kind of show how clever and deep I am as an individual. So I did try and make some questions quickly and we had a conversation and there were some lucid moments in it, but there were also a lot of awkward moments where I didn't really know how to handle the conversation. However, it did leave me wanting more. And at the end, we did strike a good vibe. And he offered me this incredible opportunity to take part in a conversation with him. It's called, I think, The Only Conversation That Matters. And if you're interested in this, you can go to his website, connerkeyes.com. That's connerkeyes.com, and you can click on Let's Talk. And this is a very interesting offer. It's an hour's conversation to get to know who you really are. And I was very intrigued by this because I do consider that the interviews that I have on this podcast are kind of like personal coaching sessions for me with experts. And I'm often, you know, just looking at the wall after the interview's over, just in mesmerized by, oh my God, I can't believe I've just had this opportunity to speak to this person kind of thing. And so with Connor, we got on this call and it was so transformative, one of the most transformative conversations that I've ever had. And it really allowed me to tap into my power and to expand my vision of who I am and my life in general and all existence in general. So today's focus of the affirmations track is going to be about unity consciousness. I will reveal more in the conversation with Connor, but unity consciousness is something that I've heard of, but I didn't really quite, it wasn't really something that I embodied. I didn't quite understand the concept of oneness, because I think we can identify with things that we like, but when it's things that we don't like, we think, I'm not them, I'm not that, and we come into separation mode again. However, what I have learned is that when we are face these obstacles of people that we don't like or things that we don't like, I do think that is an opportunity to give more love. And an example of this is, for example, when, as I am a content creator, I'm often faced with negative comments. For example, the other day, something really wound me up. I have a profile on Insight Timer, which is a very popular meditation app. And someone said that the whispering meditation was creepy. And I'm thinking, but you knew it was whispering. It's in the title, blah, blah, blah. And, or another meditation of mine, they said it was very upbeat or too fast. And I actually said in the description, it's more upbeat and faster than my normal meditation. So I just think, why are you making a comment on something that was already, you know, stated from the beginning? I haven't kind of given you any false advertising here. So that kind of like made me go, ah. But then I thought, you know, this is an opportunity for me to give more love. And instead of getting, you know, answering with some kind of snarky comment, which I might have done at some point, I try to say thank you, blah blah blah. So I do think these opportunities, when people kind of trigger us, that there's an opportunity for us to give more love in situations that can be difficult, and then we can become more love as a result. So that's something that I have been thinking of a lot lately. And also, when we think about oneness, it just seems that a lot of problems disappear. And that sounds maybe a little bit weird. It's something that I have heard of, but it's not something that I have embodied or actually believed. So I'm trying to tap into that space right now, almost to maintain the energy that was generated through my conversation with Connor, which was just mind-blowing for me. And I've recommended him to many of my friends here in Barcelona, and lots of them have connected with him to make the most of this opportunity of this Let's Talk on a feature on his website. And they are also super impressed and they have a lot more clarity about life. And I really like this approach of offering one conversation, not kind of like having to repeat and repeat over again. And I love the fact that he says that transformation doesn't take that long. It made me think about when I was doing therapy, which I've already spoken about here. I've done therapy several times in my life. And I found that at the beginning, it was very helpful to just talk about myself and just offload a lot of things to someone who is impartial. But then it gets to a point where you're just wondering if it's really helpful to go over the same stuff over and over. And the therapist would have had me there for years. And I'm thinking, I'm not that messed up. You know, no offense to anyone who does therapy long term, but you have to think about, is it making you better, or is it keeping you in this space? So I think for me, I really want to focus on solutions rather than just going over cause all the time. I think it's good to understand where certain discomforts come from, but ultimately you do have to find solutions and move on, because life is going to be complicated and you have to know how to face challenges and obstacles and not always be dwelling on past challenges. That's what I think anyway. But I do think every challenge is an opportunity to learn. And so I am very excited to share this interview with you today, because actually I actually rescheduled my interview with Connor after the first one I wasn't entirely comfortable with. And I knew that he had something very special to share. So I wanted to showcase his ideas and work in the best possible way. And I'm really impressed with how our second interview came about. And because I just prepared some questions half an hour before I got on the call, but everything flowed so much better now that I was more attuned to how he thinks. And I'm hoping that you will find it of just as much benefit as I did, because I found that this is one of the most enlightening conversations that I've ever had on this podcast. Enjoy. Do you want to upgrade your life? If so, check out my free meditation, my Life Upgrade Meditation. This meditation is very powerful. It contains 100 very powerful affirmations that correspond to the 12 areas of life from the Wheel of Life. And those areas include things like money, professional career, friends, family, relationships, sexuality, personal development, contribution to society, home environment, and much more. If you're curious about this very powerful transformative meditation, then check out the link in the show notes. And if you haven't got the show notes at hand, then the link is bit.ly/life, capital L-I-F-E, hyphen, capital U, P-G-R-A-D-E, upgrade, hyphen, meditation with a capital M. The link is also in the show notes. So if you would like to upgrade your life, check out my free Life Upgrade meditation. Now it's time for this episode's interview. We'll be speaking with Connor Keyes, a spiritual guide. Connor Keyes, welcome to the Orgasmic Lifestyle podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you here again. For those who are listening, could you tell us what you do?
What I do, this is usually a funny, I usually give funny answers to this kind of question, but for the sake of expediency and honoring how you do things on your podcast, I'm just going to give kind of my headline, which is that I'm a speaker. I am an author. I am a mentor, which means that I work with people one-on-one. It means I do what some would consider coaching. You know, I like to refer to it as mentorship or even ministry, actually. And I am a mystic. I am a mystical philosopher of sorts. Now, you and I both know from the conversations that we've had in the past that none of these things, these are sort of appellations or approximations of what's really moving through us in these lives. And usually when I get on podcasts, I like to tell the interviewer that I don't do introductions. So I have good reasons for that. And I have reasons. The reason is essentially that it allows us to get right to the message, which I like to do, mm-hmm. You know, and part of the message is that these labels that we apply to ourselves really don't get at the fullness of what's happening here, the fullness of what it is that's being expressed through these lives of ours. So while I think that's true, you are right, Venus, that, you know, just cutting to the chase about how it is I seem to be showing up in the world and operating in the world.
Yeah,
is in that way. I'm a speaker, I'm an author, I'm a mentor, I'm a coach. And I've done a lot in this life thus far. I've had a background in the natural health food industry. I am an acupuncturist by training. I've been an herbalist for over a decade. So a lot of these things kind of, they shape who I am and they don't at the same time. It's a little bit paradoxical. Yeah.
I saw on your website that it says radical transformation has never been easier. Could you explain what you mean by that?
That's wonderful. Thank you. That's a great question. My message is all about the nearness of the divine. My message is all about us coming to remember who and what it is we are, who and what it is, what it is we're doing here, where we came from, where we're going, right? Often in when people have conversations with me, there's a lot of rhetorical kind of questions, you know. I'm asking their conscious mind, is this true? Is this really true? I'm asking their conscious mind, yeah, but you know, who are you? Like, who are you? Who are you really? And there's a place in conversation where we can get to where we feel like those answers, the answers that our conscious mind offer us, the question, to the question, who we are, you know, who are we, that they don't carry the same resonance. I don't want to say the same weight or the same strength or the same power. I don't want to cast a value judgment on it, but there's something even bigger going on here than what my identity or my conscious mind has the ability to kind of grab onto as a label or as an identity, which is why, yes, like we've said before, my website says speaker, author, mentor, mystic, and none of those define me, and the same goes for Venus. Venus both is and is not Venus. There's something really mystical and magical and mysterious going on here about what the heck is happening, what it is that's being expressed though. So when I say radical transformation has never been easier, what I mean is that you can touch down on that place. You can touch down on that knowing. You can touch down on the remembrance of where you came from, what you're doing here, where you're going when this is all said and done, who you really are, who and what you really are. Instantaneously, like I said, the nearness of the divine. Often for me, that's done through conversation. I am a trained NLP practitioner and all this as well. And so you might say that part of what I'm doing is what we would call like conversational belief work, or what we call quantum linguistics sometimes, which is kind of a funny terminology. But again, none of that really matters, because you can do the same thing just asking yourself
Well, I've
who you
actually,
are.
yeah, I've had this session with you, as you know, and I found it very transformational from just one session, which is incredible. And especially, I think many people, as you know yourself, their identity is very much tied in with their profession or their purpose in life. And as you say, you're not the speaker, you're not the author, what have you. And what I realized after speaking with you is that my most authentic self shows up when I go to buy vegetables because the person in the shop doesn't know my name. They don't know who I am. They just see my smile and how polite I am. It's also organic, of course. So I'm always very appreciative that this is brought to me in a very easy way, buying directly from a farmer. So I always share my light with everyone I meet. And these people don't need to know my name or who I am. So that's something that I took away from our session. So I found that quite empowering. So just to think of myself as light and with every encounter I have, especially,
With every encounter.
Because they do say to know thyself. So, but I mean, I guess, is that what you mean? I mean, lots of teachings say know thyself. Would you agree with that? And why is it good to know ourselves?
That's a fantastic question, because oh my gosh, the kind of ancient hermetic axiom, temet nosce, right? On these journeys of ours, especially people who are spiritually curious, I'll say, I mean, our conscious minds, again, want to kind of piece together the components of our being that kind of make us the way we are. So this is why we go to human design and astrology, or Jungian psychology, or psychoanalysis in any form, or even neurolinguistic programming and values work and belief work and all this kind of stuff, right? And so this is really good, Venus, because I'm going to add to this conversation that actually I used to function professionally as a professional astrologer, and so I was a professional astrologer, and I had my own kind of synthesis of Western astrology and human design and a little bit of Vedic astrology that I was kind of weaving together to tell stories about people's lives. And the reason why I gave it up, right? I gave it up because you don't need me. You don't need an astrologer. You don't need anyone to know who you are, right? One of the things to know about a good astrology reading or session, like or something of that nature, is that an astrologer shouldn't be telling you anything that you don't already know, right? So everything out of an astrologer's mouth should actually be like, oh yeah, that is true. I know that to be true, right? So fine, the fine structure fabric of the relationship between celestial bodies and time at the moment of my first breath tells a story which has something accurate to say. I'm not even going to say true, and I'm not even going to say meaningful necessarily. Of course, it's meaningful, but my question is like, what's the point? And why are we looking outside of ourselves for the things which we actually already know? It reminds me
Validation,
of
I guess, validation.
why do we need validation?
I guess because we feel lost and we want to know,
Of course we do.
we want to
Yeah.
find the path, you know.
Right. But and will those answers that we seek outside of us, will they ever actually satisfy that? Or are we playing a game of conditionally relating with the world in such a way that the answers which I seek, I'm actually perpetually keeping at arm's length because I've got these beliefs running about the world that there are answers about me which are actually outside of me, right?
That takes me to my next
So,
question, which is about guidance. I mean, for example, sometimes we look for guidance in external sources such as astrology, or even just universe, give me a sign. And I saw someone I follow on Instagram share something about this, and she stopped asking the universe for signs and started paying attention to her body instead. Would you say that was a good way to guide ourselves and like noticing how certain things make us feel? I mean, how can we?
Oh God,
How can we,
absolutely. Yeah.
yeah.
Yes. So one of the things that I teach is, there's this kind of, ironically, there's this kind of psychometaphysics that's involved in a right relationship between who it is we actually are and what I just call it the conscious mind. It's the logical, rational, intellectual, ego based whatever. It's that, right? We all know what I'm talking about. There's you and your essence and you and your fullness. And then there's this person that convinces you that it's you, but it's really just another version of you, which is perceiving the world and everything in your world as separate from you, which is not true, right? And it's in the corner of the room or in the back of your head, and it's just yapping, yapping, yapping about the things that it thinks that it knows, right? And I call that the conscious mind. So, one of the things that I teach in inviting people into right relation with themselves, right, is to go in the direction that their body is already moving, right? So, and this is partially, you can find things like this and all over the place, and it's also found in human design, right? Go in the direction that your body is already moving, because there's often will be like at a fork in the road when it comes to making a decision. Like, let's say that there's these options that we have and we don't know which path to take. We don't know which option to take. I can see myself going over here, or I could see myself going over here. That voice that is trying to bifurcate our movement through life into these disparate kind of these different pathways, that is the conscious mind trying to move you off, right? Trying to slow you down. Now, that's a misnomer, right? The conscious mind is not trying to slow you down. It's not trying to move you off course. What it's doing is it's doing the only thing that it can do, which is relate to the world in the terms in which it perceives things, which is finite, limited, linear, sequential, transactional, conditional, certain. Your conscious mind thinks that it knows things. It thinks it's certain. None of that is true. Not only is none of that true, none of that is actually reflective of what's actually going on here, right? Getting back to the initial point of this conversation, know thyself. I'm not, my name isn't Connor, like not really, like you're not Venus. You're Venus and then everything else too, right? Right. So being in having that as our foundational kind of premise of how we relate with the world situates our this thing that's talking in our heads, and I'm using really funny language, I'm just kind of flowing with it, right? But this voice, this other voice, when we situate that our true selves, and we kind of like there's this balance, like in every single one of us, every single one of us knows what that voice sounds like, and more importantly, we know what believing that voice feels like. And believing that voice is the kind of thing that would say, should I buy vi this vegetable or this vegetable? Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why that would be the case, but and you really don't know which one to get veg. Obviously, of course, you just get both. You just get both. But if there really were like some serious thing where you're like, I've got limited time, that's one assumption that your conscious mind is going to convince you of, which is false. You do not have limited time. I've got limited options. That's also false. You do not have limited options, right? We get this fork in the road. We get stuck. My invitation to people is to actually just recognize that that's that voice talking, and you know it when you feel it, because when you believe it, that voice, it tends to not feel good. It tends to contract your sense of self, your concept of self. Your energy shrinks. Who you are shrinks into a box that's been defined by something which is false, which is not true, which is based on your perception of the world. You do not need to base your identity and who you are on your perception of the world. So
So what kind of feeling in the body can we be guided by?
go just what exactly what you're doing in this very moment. That's a fantastic, that's another fantastic question. You don't have to qualify it. You don't have to ask the question, what is the feeling? What does that feel like? Right? You know what it feels like. It feels like the thing that you're already doing. It feels like the direction that your body is already moving in. Right? And the conscious mind can step in and slow that process down because it's so convincing and it's so loud and it's so believable sometimes. Oh, wait, stop. You've only got this much time and there's these other options. And what if this is, here's the, the reason why I say this is because I can relate. This has been applicable in my life. Well, hold on. Like, what if this other option is better? What if the grass is greener over here? And you taking this option, you're investing the opportunity cost. You're actually sacrificing this potential. What if you're going to make the wrong choice? What if you're going to make the wrong decision? Right? There's no such thing.
Okay, it reminds me of I just came to mind your how you describe yourself on LinkedIn, which is interesting because it goes against all the books I'm reading at the moment. Because I think I told you last time, I read this book recently, which was all about personal brand and trying to condense your mission or message into like three brand pillars, which for me, as someone who's interested in many things, felt a bit limiting, but also it kind of felt kind of it helped me gain some structure because I feel sometimes a bit overwhelmed, a bit scattered. I'm also reading a book now from a future guest all about mindful self-discipline. And this is someone who wakes up at 2:30 in the morning, which just goes against my no alarm life completely. But I am wondering, wow, what would my life be like if I had more self-discipline? But then I think about my conversations with you, and I think that would go against that message. But for those who are unfamiliar, your LinkedIn says, I refuse to market myself to your pain points. I just love you. So you don't want to contract yourself either.
Thank you
I
so much.
guess it's an
Yes, I
element
love
of
it.
what should I be doing? I mean, that's the thing. I know should is not the word you would use, but there is that sometimes that dilemma. And I think for many people who are, let's say, self-employed, they just need that. They find a framework can be helpful sometimes, but is it going against my soul? But I do want to achieve things, but because in this book that I'm reading now, The Mindful Self-Discipline, it says the only thing between you and your goal is your actions and your self-discipline and your commitment to reaching your goal. What would you say?
May I?
Yes,
May
please.
I? Yeah. You not only are you achieving things, you will achieve things. Achievement is your nature when you are fully yourself. And you cannot go against your soul.
Okay. Another thing you said
You can.
in our conversations is the tree just grows. And but I just wonder, what if we do nothing, nothing gets done? Is that, I mean, how can we,
That is a, thank you, Venus. Yeah, that is a sort of a classical Taoist motif. Like we talked about I love this. This is such a fantastic discussion, Venus. We talked in our first talk about poem 37 of the Tao Te Ching, one reading of which, the first two lines of which is most common, the most common translation that we maybe may have heard is nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. Nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. And another reading of that, the Stephen Mitchell translation, is that the Tao does nothing, yet through it all things are done. Right. And so, yes, that is an invitation to relinquish ourselves of the obligation to perform. And that is why I dig it. That is why I dig it, is because you did not come into this life. You did not come into this life desiring to pressure yourself into action. And most of us, we think that doing the thing which actually feels good to us, and actually, see, here's the thing, fundamental to my sort of not just my philosophy, but the very cosmology at the bedrock of like what's going on in this universe is that following that invitation and opening oneself up to the possibility that your desires are also the thing which you can trust yourself. So not only know thyself, but trust yourself. And that somewhere in the next, the what we, you know, the, talk about your the what is it, next steps, like what's it called? There's a sort of a goal-oriented philosophical term for this in like time management and productivity speak. There's a something something next step. Well, if I was gonna make a planner, which I would never do, I never say never. Never, 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 never say never. So, if I was gonna make a planner, it would have like let's just play around with this thought for a moment. If I was gonna make a planner, it would have one column, and it would just say, "What are the FBNSs? What are the feels best next steps?" Not
Okay.
the right, not the we're
Shoulds.
not qualifying right exactly. We're not qualif exactly, Venus. Exactly. We're not qualifying this in any other way than taking the invitation to allow life to be expressed through you automatically in the way that it wants, right? Nature takes the path of least resistance. Why would that be any different for you, your body, your life, the way that your life is writing itself magnificently, mysteriously, divinely? Why would that not be true for us?
Okay.
Right, like you said, the tree just grows. Yeah.
So it's taking me to the next question, which is all about language, because I'm speaking to you. I've heard that you don't like words like should, for obvious reasons, I think now, and words like surrender. Are there any other words that you think might not be helpful to us?
Yeah,
Why is
yeah.
language important? Why is language important, the way we speak
You
to
know,
ourselves?
could. God, these are good questions. Okay. I love it. Okay. You know why that's such a fantastic question? Because the answer to it is a paradox. Words don't matter. They don't matter. And they do. They don't. And they do. Right? You can have a kind of sense of knowing and a sense of self and a sense of, we'll say, alignment or whatever. You want to call it, doesn't matter. You can know because you do. You actually do know. Everyone who's listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about. They know, guaranteed, guaranteed. And for someone, they might really love the term surrender. I was talking to someone, I believe, yesterday, that surrender is actually a really, really important term for them, that it makes a lot of sense. Like if you talk to people, say in AA, for instance, surrender is a very important term. And as a matter of fact, the term, like a, let's say we're talking to a Muslim, the term Islam means surrender. So hold on, Connor doesn't like the term surrender. I would like to qualify these things because the reason why I am picky about the words and the language that I use to express this message is because there's a whole lot of baggage. There's a whole lot of subconscious assumptions and associations that we can subconsciously, not unconsciously, subconsciously make around certain term, around certain terms or certain words. Now, does that matter? Ultimately, no. Ultimately, no. But the extent to which that me being picky about my words is sort of is ground. It's like, you know, I can orient myself to this as kind of like the fertile, you know, fertile ground for a conversation. So let's take this for instance, before we talk about other terms that I personally choose not to use in my life, or that when I'm having a conversation with someone, I don't necessarily raise issues with, but I'm just like I ask people what that term means to them to make sure that we don't have these subconscious assumptions. For instance, the term surrender implies when do we surrender? We surrender when we are threatened. We surrender when the police are after us. We surrender when in battle. We surrender in battle. So my concern about the use of the term surrender, say in English at least, the way that this is translated, the way that this is used, is that surrender actually implies submission to a kind of violence. And I am totally down with the possibility that that association with in someone's mind is just not there. Like, okay, I see what you're saying, like battle and like the cops are out to get you, so you raise a white flag. Like, okay, I see what you're saying. Surrender, yeah, that makes sense, but that's just not how I think about that. Well, you know what? Great. But one of the issues that I run into in conversation with people is that a lot of people believe subconsciously, oh man, like way down there, people believe that life sucks. People believe that the world is out to get them. People believe that life is not trustworthy, that the world is not trustworthy, that the world is not safe. People believe, this is a big one. People believe that God is an asshole. Right? People believe that God is an asshole. Right? And some of this is what we inherit from this, I'm not get too religious, but we do inherit a lot of this from the Abrahamic faiths, where God is merciful, but God is also a judge, right? God can also perform as a punisher. And heretical as it may be, and I actually consider myself such a spiritual person. A spiritual person to the extent that I wouldn't say that I'm not a religious person. Like I don't care. Those labels and identities don't matter to me. However, what I know in my heart to be true is that what we're getting at when we say surrender is probably more like something like allowing.
Allowing,
It's like
letting go.
re it's like yeah, it's like a release.
Release,
It's
yeah.
like what is and what is what is what do can you know you can go to your grandma, you know, or you know, or contemporary Christian this or that, and what do they say? They say let Jesus take the wheel, and that is actually the very same sentiment. What do they say in AA? They say in 12 steps, they say let go and let God. So the very same thing is being gotten at. You see what I mean? Like the same, like we know this. When I ask someone of a particular, there's a particular theology about the nature of God that includes God's judgmentality, or that includes God's propensity to anger or punish or these kinds of things. My question is that true? Is that true? And they would say yes, but and I think that our conscious minds are capable of telling us stories about what the creator actually is when we know in our heart of hearts what the creator actually is. Yeah. And just to round that off, again, a lot of people, even if they say, let's say they move to a like totally different spiritual ideology. We actually talked about this before too, the relationship between the New Age and Christendom. Well, I mean, a lot of people carry into all their attempts at relating with the world in a faith-based or spiritual way some of these assumptions, because they're just there and the conscious mind grabs onto them and says, yeah, this is really true. I promise you, the world is a scary, unsafe, untrustworthy place, and God is an asshole who's challenging you to evolve, to ascend, to grow, to learn, to be something better than what you are in this very moment. And I don't think that that's what's going on.
One of my favorite books is Your Word is Your Wand by Florence Scovel Shinn. I'm a big fan of her and her affirmations. Going back to words, I mean, one word, just a little sidetrack. One word I don't like to use is luck. If someone says I'm lucky, I'm thinking, no, I worked for this. I prefer fortunate is more of an acknowledgement of gratitude, but lucky, it seems very random when, it just seems like I was just, I got these privileges, or, it seems all random that, I mean, when I'm speaking to my family in England and they say, oh, it's 20 degrees and sunny here, it's beautiful, and then it's raining in Manchester, where I'm from, they say, oh, you're so lucky. I'm like, no, I made the decision to come to Spain, so I made it happen. But going back to
So
words,
can I hold on? Can I though? That's really interesting. May I?
yeah.
Is that for what? Like for one thing, for instance, it's funny, right? I'm gonna get my underwear all in a wad over the term surrender, which is not really true. That's not what I'm doing. I'm just pointing my attention at things in our language that can reveal subconscious assumptions that we're carrying around. And so that's why I like to ask people, what do you mean by surrender? So you said twice in your definition of luck that you worked for it, and that's why you don't approve of that definition of luck. I don't personally, something like luck, like I shrug my shoulders. I'm like, I wouldn't call it luck, but I don't interrupt the conversation for that. Surrender, I might. Luck, no, because it's more immaterial. You don't like luck because you believe, if I may, Venus, you believe that you work to get where you are. And I would invite you to consider the possibility that you've been yourself
Oh,
to
absolutely.
allow yourself. You've
Absolutely.
been yourself. So you've been
Was guided.
yourself. You've been yourself to the extent that it has allowed you to arrive at the place in which you now find yourself. And that is a very different thing than thinking that the world is something that I must push against in order to achieve something, right? Like we were talking about, like achievement at the beginning. There is nothing to achieve. There's nothing to do. There's nowhere to go. There's no one to be other than yourself when you are fully yourself. Like the knowing, like who are you? Like just ask yourself right now, like who are you really? And you know it. Everyone who's listening to this, you know it. Do you have to define it?
Takes
No.
me beautifully onto my next question, which is about
Great, great,
the
great.
concept of oneness. Before our amazing conversation, which was last week now, which is the Let's Talk service you offer on your website, this concept of oneness, unity consciousness, was very, I was familiar with the concept, but I found it difficult to grasp. How can we understand it in ways that make sense, and how can it have an impact on our lives? I think I mean,
I
this for me was like, it was,
love
I heard of it many
it.
times, because I think when we think about no separation, then we think about someone we don't like and we think, I'm not them, or something you don't like, and you just think, no, you just feel this massive rejection, and so you want to reinforce that separation. So I felt through our conversation that I came to this way of thinking, and I was so, it felt so good to me. It felt like problems dissipated, and I wanted to stay in that space. So I found this meditation on Insight Timer called Unity Consciousness Affirmations. I listen to it every morning now because one of the affirmations is where the next step is always obvious, and I just love that. So it's
Amen.
about it's honestly it's an
Amen.
incredible meditation, and it's I listen to
Yes.
it every single morning since I wake up and I'm half asleep. I'm like getting this in my brain. I don't want to lose that feeling that I felt after our conversation. And I was talking to a friend about this who's very spiritual. And then she says, "Oh, I felt that when I took MDMA." And I was thinking, "You don't need to take any drugs." I just thought,
That's right. That's right.
I thought
That's
that
right.
was a very disempowering concept. I mean, I have lots of people who are promoting these ideas who want to come on my podcast, and my heart says no. I don't want to be saying to people, "You must take this to find this wisdom or to experience this ego death or this oneness." I think it's like Jesus. I mean, I'm not like a Jesus fan, but Jesus didn't say, "Come to me every Thursday at 3 o'clock." It was a one-time healing, you know. So I think this concept of oneness, I felt
Jesus
after
said,
our.
Jesus said,
I
Jesus
don't know what
said,
he said, but you know what I mean.
Jesus said, it is your faith that has healed you.
Okay.
Right? Jesus is in the crowd with a thousand. It's like there's so much I want to say. You're killing me. I love this conversation. There's so much I want to comment on. Let's get back to oneness, but let me say first, tell a little story that Jesus was moving through the crowd. There's thousands of people who want to be blessed by this up-and-coming rabbi who seems to be performing miracles and has mystical powers, and there's rumors that he's the king, the new king, and of Israel, like of, you know. And so he's moving through the crowd, and this is Connor's rendition of it. And everybody wants a piece of him, is trying to touch him, and he stops. And he says, "Someone touched the hem of my garment. Someone touched the hem of my garment." And his disciples are closest to him. They're like his bodyguards almost, like, duh, duh, duh. And the disciples are like, "Dude, this guy's so weird. Of course, like, yeah, everybody's touching the hem of your garment. What do you mean?" Jesus is like, "No, someone touched the hem of my garment." And they're like, "I don't get this guy. You know, he's so weird. Everyone's touching the hem of your garment." In this, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in the New Testament, in this part of the story, he was in a crowd of lots of people, and he says, "Someone touched the hem of my garment." He turns around and he looks at this woman, and he says, "You touched the hem of my garment." And she's like, "Yes, I did, and I'm healed. I'd been bleeding." She'd had, menorrhagia. She'd been bleeding for 18 years. Okay. And she says to Jesus, she says, "You healed me. I touched the hem of your garment and you healed me." And Jesus says, "It is your faith that healed you." So not only did Jesus not say, "Meet me at 3 o'clock on Thursday, every Thursday."
No, I'm saying he didn't. That's what I mean, because I think
Right. Yeah.
healers are
Right.
saying come back once a week for many times, and then we'll see how it goes. But I think that's what I like about your the one
Well,
conversation.
let me carry that. So right, if the healers, I get what you mean. Like, you go to your practitioner of XYZ healing modality, and it's fantastic. I mean, for God's sake, I used to be well, I'm still an acupuncturist. I'm a trained acupuncturist, but I don't practice acupuncture right now. I mean, come on, that's totally a modality that puts the person in question, the patient, say, in the kind of patient practitioner or patient healer, client healer relationship. There's only one of us. There's only one of us. There's only one of us in the room. There's only one of us talking. There's only one thing happening. There's only one thing going on, right? So, in the same way that the healer, Jesus didn't say, "Come to me every Thursday at 3 p.m. I really love that. We are also capable of, let's keep on with the Jesus metaphor, just because I, to let go and let Jesus take the wheel, right? And that goes for, here back to oneness, that goes for what you think of as your conscious understanding of what unity and what oneness is. Because if I could rewind, I wanted to interrupt you so bad, right? Your initial thing about oneness was that Well, actually, will you can you set this up very briefly? Like, what is it about oneness? I'm going to ask you a rhetorical question, Venus, and you and I have a rapport now, which I love. You and I have a rapport now where you know what the answer to this is. You know what the answer to this is, and so does everyone listening to this. You know it in your heart, but since you know me and your conscious mind has a rapport with what you think of as me and what this conversation is like, what this how this goes, you're going to hear the answer to this question in your conscious mind, which is an important part of this. It means that our conscious mind and who it is we actually are have found a kind of resonance and relationship that actually feels good to us rather than feeling like resistance. So the question is, what is it that you think you don't understand about oneness?
I think I get it now after speaking to you, but before that, I've heard
Right.
it's been known in spiritual. I've been consuming a spiritual concept for many, many years now, and this was an area that just, or everything being connected, no separation, which was just not really on my. It wasn't part of my reality, and I
Yeah.
think gradually I've been taking on board more and more ideas, the ones that resonate with me, and I think the resistance comes from things that I don't identify with, things like someone you don't like. But what I learned from our conversation is that these things are opportunities to bring more love out of me, to express more love.
Oh, yeah.
So now I'm seeing it that way, because otherwise you can be in the ego and wanting to be right, wanting to prove something to someone when you have some kind
Right.
of conflict. Whereas if
You've
you're,
never been right. You've never been right one moment of your life.
yeah, but it's just about being the love, or just like just expressing the love, and forgetting about this need to be perceived as right or have the last word. And I've had a couple of incidences in the last week which have been like clashes, like with this friend who's all into all these plant medicine modalities, and I'm very, very different from that. And I was
Sure,
telling her about
sure.
this incredible conversation with you and about the oneness and all of this and the unity consciousness. She's, oh yeah, I felt that when I took XYZ drug, So, and I was like, wow, I mean, that can't be good. I mean, I wouldn't like to have that feeling that I would need to take something to experience what I experienced through speaking to you, because that takes away the concept of the answers are within, because it seems like a contradiction. I
It
think.
doesn't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily. I mean, the only reason why the conversation works or the drugs work, and they both kind of work equally, is because the answers are within. I mean, I would never, I can't believe I'm going to say this. The neurotrans, the receptors, right? The receptors for whatever, however, those modified kind of neurotransmitters, those serotonin-like compounds and those alkaloids and whatever, the way that the shape of those little packets of energy and information interact with what we think of as receptors. You'll see it, I do a lot of quantum biology as well. So chemicals do not bind to receptors in the way that we thought of. Some of them do, pretty much mechanically, electromagnetically, but most don't. Right. And so it's a field effect. But the only reason why any of this would be possible in the first place is still because the answer is within it. That does not change. Right. The thing that you are, I won't say like, I don't alarmed by, that's not the right word, but the thing that raises a flag for a question for you is the extent to which I'm seeing something as separate from myself as being able to provide an answer to me, which I couldn't provide for myself in the absence of that thing, that substance, that whatever it is. Yeah, hey, heck, the same goes for an astrologer. The same goes for talking to me. Because, like I've said, and I'm going to keep saying it in this conversation, in every conversation I have, every single person listening to this knows exactly everything that I'm talking about. Not only does every person listening to this know what we're kind of circling around here, this kind of like big ineffable thing, this like the one thing that's happening. Like, not only do we all like know that, not only do we all know that, you know everything. There's nothing which you don't need to know in the moment in which you're invited to have the knowing of whatever needs to be known
And it was something
move
that I heard of, but
to move in the direction of your desire.
it
Yeah,
was
go ahead.
something I'd heard of, but I couldn't really grasp the idea until, really believe it until actually speaking to you.
So the conditions that you are placing upon your conditional understanding or your knowledge or your, to use a sci-fi term, you're grokking. Like you do you grok oneness? Like okay. Doesn't have anything to do necessarily. It has everything to do and paradoxically nothing to do with oneness. Because you do not need a conscious, intellectual, rational, logical understanding of the thing which you already know.
Now, I just didn't want it to be a fleeting sensation. So this is why I'm doing this meditation every morning, because I wanted to hold on to those ideas until they become just part of who I am, and even in my consciousness. So I embody those things and go back to my essence of and. When people are triggering me, I'm just trying to like act in a way that's like part of the love and the light that I want to express of who I am, and not need to be right, or
What are the our conscious minds want to know? What are the practical next step? What are the what's the methodology that I can take to getting there more of the time?
yeah, I guess that was it. I mean, for our conversation, it was more about the
Right.
or what we call in language teaching, we call drilling. So over and over the same question and giving different answers as it progressed, which was that's how it was. That's how I perceived it.
I like that. I like that. That's right, right? Because the answer is you don't need an answer. You
Yeah,
don't need
also,
an
and it's
answer.
interesting because the day after we spoke, I was offered a voiceover job, and I do lots of voice, and it was interesting because it was erotic stories. I'm up for erotic stories. I do my own erotic stories, but it depends, not all erotica is sex positive. So I click on this link and I just see this page of porn, and I'm just porn like rubs me up the wrong way. I just feel like a very and I was like, no. And the criteria or the inner dialogue that I had, this is not making me more me. This is not part of. So that's now my new criteria. Is this making me more me or not? Is
I
this
love it.
helping me to shine my light? No, it's not, So that's kind of how I, yeah, the money would be nice, but I'm not that desperate.
Exactly.
I think something better will come along,
You
So
know something better. You know something that's more, that you're more desirous of.
yeah, and you just
That
feel it in your
feels better
bones.
to you.
Because even in the book we talked about women who run with the wolves, it's like in your bones, like what's right for you, So let's go back to connection and everything being connected. Is there a divine plan? Do we have control over our destiny? I mean, I do like to try and find meaning in everything, rather than randomness. What do you think?
I love it. I just love it. And I love it because you've teased out of me some fairly intricate components of the philosophy. It is ultimately incredibly simple. I got told, but I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and they said they were a Nicene Christian, which means that they believe in the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, that Jesus was begotten of the Virgin, and they've got a list that makes that the belief in these things is essentially the calling card of what it means to be a Nicene Christian, and that's great, and that's fine, and that's their prerogative, and it's their theology, it's their cosmology, it's their Christology, and he said to me. He said, "You sound like you have a whole lot of absolutes." And I said, I said, "Wow, that's so fascinating to me because, sure, yeah, like this curtain, Like, this is absolute. So yeah, I have a lot of absolutes because I am in the moment in which I find myself, and everything is both real and not real. And the extent to which I want to push against the place in which I find myself as inviting me to feel like it could be better than what it is wrong. Yeah, wrong is a judgment. It's incorrect. Gosh, it sure doesn't feel as good as what we were talking about, allowing, surrender, flow, acceptance, whatever it is. And you could say, yeah, everything is like absolute. It's the way it is. I'm kind of like a naive realist in that way. And at the same time, I'm quite the opposite, right? There's only one absolute. And you know what it is. And I know what it is. And everyone listening to this knows what it is. And not one person, not one conscious mind ever needs to be able to put it into words, to be able to explain it, to define it, to give it any kind of characteristic that satisfies the logical, rational, intellectual parts of them that wants a logical, rational, intellectual explanation for it. No such thing need exist in order for that one thing, which is absolute, which we all know to be the very guiding, expanding, exploding, just life. Call it life. Literally, call it life. Literally, call it life. It is life. And you know exactly what that means. So rather than looking outside of myself to qualify the things which give it meaning, is there a such thing as a coincidence? No, hell no, there's not a such thing. There's no such thing as a coincidence, right? That is just, we know that in our bones. And if you want to go to, Laplace's demon or the, calculating the trajectory and momentum of every hydrogen particle from the Big Bang, then it all somehow summates to this moment in time. Yeah, that's all true. And it also doesn't matter because the meaning is baked in. The meaning doesn't need to be given or explained by the conscious mind. The meaning is right in front of your face. The meaning is here now. The meaning is not something which I need my conscious mind to grab onto in order to feel safe with. Your safety is a gift. Your safety is given. The world is trustworthy. The world is safe. And that's what's happening here, right? And so this philosophy, the more I just I don't know, whatever. The more I sink into this, the more I expand out to this, whatever direction, whatever, the more this is the way that it is, the more this message comes through me, I find that some people have a very hard time with the conscious mind not having solid ground to stand on. And this is why there's a portion in my book where I say, it is the very point at which your conscious mind can do nothing other than jump ship. Right? We get to the point in conversation, like we're doing right now, where my conscious mind all of a sudden knows that it has no choice but to give up, essentially, but to kind of like jump ship. And at the same time, something in it, because it is a part of you and your fullness, wants to go in that direction. You want to go in that direction. I don't know what's there. I can't even. It is mystery. It is mystery. I have no ground to stand on. Am I capable of like trusting in that? Do I desire that? Am I capable of feeling safe in that? Somehow, yeah. It's scary as shit to the conscious mind.
Taking me beautifully to the next question,
Good,
which is
good.
it's all like aligned. This is kind
I
of like
love it. I love it.
influenced by a triggering conversation I had with a friend the other day, and also something I saw on your LinkedIn. For example, the other day I've been made aware of two very tragic events in my life in the last week or so, and I was trying to process these things. And I offloaded to a friend, and she said, "No, I don't want to hear about bad things." Because she was talking about Law of Attraction and Neville Goddard, and like she still doesn't want to hear about any negativity because it's like speaking them into existence or something. And then I also saw something in your on your LinkedIn about healing and how this kind of pressure to heal. How do we deal with and self-love, which will come from that? But when we're in a time in our lives, which many of us, you know, when we're in difficult times, how can we proceed in order to feel better? Do we just process and allow? Or because I think sometimes in this positive psychology world, there's this obsession of, you know, raising the vibration or trying to get into a positive space when you really should just be just feel it. And it's okay to kind of say, oh, that's a tragic thing, but that can also have a positive effect. I think, but I'm so grateful for every minute, you know, that I'm okay. I'm okay right now.
The extent to the extent to which you rationalize the conditions which allow you to feel good, right? In other words, this negative thing can be positive because it leads me to gratitude. Why are there any conditions that need to be met in order for you to feel grateful for what's in front of you?
I guess
Right.
we just forget, because sometimes when it takes sometimes, you know, spraining your ankle to realize you're grateful for
Yeah.
your legs, you know, sometimes it takes something like that. I mean, for me in
Yeah, sure.
2020, I had Bell's palsy,
Yeah.
and all I wanted was, you know, I couldn't smile for a month, and smiling is a massive part of my identity. So when I was wearing my vegetables, I was like, oh. I was wearing a mask at the time, but I was just, you know, I felt like I'm very frustrated now. All I want to do is be able to smile, and once I have that again, I'll be happy, you know. But there was a great spiritual lesson in that. But I think there's this, you know, pressure of, you know, just healing in general, this obsession or obligation to heal. And then you spoke about the importance of self-love and not the type of performative self-love. Can you explain what self-love means to you?
One, I'm like just like doing somersaults in my mind about how awesome of an interviewer you are.
Thank you.
Because one, you're very skilled at, for one thing, actually explicating the contents of your conscious mind, which is fertile ground for releasing its the necessary grip that it thinks it needs on reality. And at the same time, you're just astute. Like you've looked at my LinkedIn and you're like, whoa, and I love this. I love that I'm being, I don't that's a word. We never really got to that, but that's one word that I don't use. I don't use words like vulnerability or accountability. But so I'm jokingly going to say that you're holding me accountable for what's on my LinkedIn.
I didn't look for it, by
I'm
the
not going to
way.
go into that.
Saw it. It just came in
Yeah.
my feed. I just didn't. I wasn't.
Of course.
I didn't look
That's
today just to kind of like take note of
great.
it. It just really
I
struck me.
love it. I love it.
I'm all about self-love myself, so I would like to know.
Yeah.
And also, I
Yeah.
think it's overused, this term, perhaps. And that was like a self-love
Yeah.
as
Yes.
opposed to obligatory healing.
Yes. First of all, yes, to answer the former question, I don't use words like vulnerability or accountability, but I will not go into that. You'll have to have me on again and we'll have to have another conversation. For this, let's talk about self-love. Look, self-love is your nature. Like now, like right now. Like people think that self-love is something that they have to do or something that they have to earn or something that they have to be. You don't have to be anything or do anything. Self-love does, I mean, come on. Like the core of you, the center of you, your heart of hearts, like you know this. You know it. So it's so obvious. It is actually, it's like just glaringly obvious. The call to action by a lot of people to say that what she's responding to, I'm so glad you brought it up. What she's responding to is I saw a meme, and there's a little bit, if you do follow me on LinkedIn, I have this kind of running series called When Motivational Memes Get the Connor Treatment, or When Connor Gets Snarky About Motivational Memes on the Internet, right? So What I find in a lot of our motivational memes is obligation and the expectation to perform. And if I don't think that human beings took physical form in a human body for any other reason than to enjoy the contrast of thinking that the illusion that I'm separate from anything in my experience is real, you're not here to fulfill the obligations or the duties that you have encumbered yourself with in some kind of legal, spiritual, spiritual contract. You're not here to perform. God's not judging your every action, and you're not beholden to the things that you think you've achieved, that your conscious mind is think you've thinks that you've achieved. When you're done, you don't take a list of achievements, to Saint Peter at the pearly gate when you're over and say, "Whoa, here's all the good things I did." No. And we know this. We know this is true. Like, this is just, it's, we know this is true. The thing she was reacting to, I think she's talking about, is a meme that said, help me out, Venus. Was it that,
It was
heal yourself, so that you
bleed on the
don't bleed on
people who didn't
people
cut
who
you.
didn't cut you.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. You don't, so you heal yourself, basically. I forget what the first line is. Something like, heal yourself so you don't bleed on people who didn't cut you. Now, first off, let's start off with like basic human interaction. Let's say that that's even how that worked, that you bleed on people, which isn't how that works. But let's say that that is. Let's just pretend for a second that you're over there bleeding on people because you're so wounded. You're just bleeding on everyone. If you go up to me and you just soak me in blood, if you just get blood all over me because you have unhealed wounds, I'm just going with the rhetoric of what this meme is trying to teach us. Whose problem is it that I get upset that I have blood all over me? Whose problem is that?
Yours.
Do you do exactly, exactly, Venus, it's mine. Do you control my state?
No.
No. No. So we can absolve ourselves of the very convoluted way of social interaction and human like community, like participation in the human family and social interaction that this meme, that this motivational meme is trying to teach us just by that alone. I don't, you bleed on me all you want. It's my problem if I, I can do anything. I can move. I can say, go away. I can do it. The world is my oyster, and it's your oyster too. Now, does that mean that you like you have some obligation to heal yourself so that you don't see? You see how like conditional that way of relating to other people is? Like, it puts us in this video game that, oh man, it's not like you didn't come here. Sure, this is a video game, but it's not that it's that's not how it's played. One, it's cooperative and somehow paradoxically totally single player at the same time. And you're just, I don't, I can carry the video game metaphor usually pretty far, but in this case, I'm not going to stretch my conscious mind to try to make, you're just not obligated not to bleed on anybody. Like, why? So I love this so much, Venus. You've gotten me all fired up and it's so much fun. If you go healing yourself, whatever the hell that means, what I said in the meme was, look, trust yourself, trust life, trust what's in front of you. Be who you are, and who you are is patient, and who you are is loving. Right? Healing happens automatically. Healing just happens. Take the tree, for example. You scar the tree, you put a cut in the tree. You carve your middle school boyfriend girlfriend's initials with a heart in between them into the bark of the tree. And what does the tree do? It scarifies. It heals itself. Is that tree obligating itself to heal? Is that tree even exerting energy to heal? Some would say yes, because they wouldn't want to put us in a conditional world where it isn't the case. It could have been the case that you scarred your initials into the tree, or it couldn't have been the case that it scarred your initials into the tree. But now, all of a sudden, we're back in relating to life as if you owe life something.
I think for me, I now I'm rebranding myself as holistic self-love content creator.
Great, great.
I'm kind of not just doing sexuality more; it's more than that. Sexuality is part of it, and my message in that is to encourage women to prioritize their own pleasure, not just serve men, but to actually be connected with themselves and their pleasure, which will make the world a better place. I'm convinced of. But also, I think
Absolutely.
self-love is acts of self-care, but also self-compassion. And I've seen some of my friends lately who start to, let's say, start using sex toys because they never really masturbated before, they never connected with their bodies. And then they have this massive sadness of this void because they're not with a man. And I'm like, no, you've got to really kind of be so full and so complete if you want to love someone else. And I think for me, that's part of my message of self-love is to really be so full of love yourself. And this is something similar is echoed in your LinkedIn post about how this love will radiate out because you're full of love, and then that
That's
love
who you
can
are.
be given to someone else. But to have, I my analogy is like a cupcake, like. I am the sponge, the person will give me the frosting. It makes it taste better, but it's not necessary. So that's how I kind of look at, relationships or, it's not, but never filling a void
That's good.
because
That's
that can
good.
be dangerous to think of that like, giving all that power to someone else to make you feel good. But when you should be really full of love yourself. And I have some friends going through some heartbreaking situations and they're way of dealing with it without wanting to judge is just like the self-destruction, like getting really drunk and like kissing strangers when you should be really amping up that self-love, really prioritizing yourself, spoiling yourself with maybe self-care practices and just having self-compassion and allowing that pain and just and saying, 'cause if I need to cry sometimes, I just tell myself it's okay, because I'm not in this trap of like, I've got to raise my vibration, I'm just like, I'm going to
I
live
love it.
right now,
I love it. And you can go get drunk and kiss strangers, and that's fine. And there's nothing inherent, and there's nothing inherently wrong with anything.
Yeah, I get
And what we're doing is inviting people not only to be themselves, but to trust that following the thing which it is they actually want to do is the way that, I mean, that's life. What's funny about this, and I don't even talk about this, is when people like stepping out of our own way is a little is a pretty apt of a metaphor, I suppose, for what it is we're talking about. And at the same time, it still creates the kind of dichotomous, paradoxical injunction to do something, like step out of your own way. Like you don't even have to, I mean, there's nothing that you have to do. You know what I mean? So that's the bedrock of what's going on here. What we're saying is like, I bet you, I would bet the farm, I bet the farm that for every one of us, our conscious mind has convinced us not to do things that we actually want to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Because why? Because the world isn't safe, because the world isn't trustworthy, because I'm not safe, because God is an asshole. Because I've got to be better. And the problem, like, don't, heal yourself so you don't bleed on people who didn't cut you. I mean, oh my God. Oh my God. It's just like a bunch of pointed finger, like point, who are you gonna point the finger at? Like, well, wait. You know what? With that logic, you can go to the person who did cut you and you can bleed on them all you want. Just don't bleed on people who didn't cut you. You see what I'm saying? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. What we're saying, all we're saying is, Venus, I feel like we honestly could just say that life is good.
It's a good message. That's good. Let's talk about your book. I am definitely going to be reading your book. And when is it out? And what is it about?
Soon. It's out soon. It's out soon.
Can you be more specific? What's the title? What's
I
the title?
exist outside of the field of time, although I will say that as do you, and so I will say that, to the extent to which I am a human being having a human experience and a world that does in it, seem to invite me into ways of playing in the field of linear time. Things are moving. I record the audiobook tomorrow, for instance.
So you finished
You know,
writing it, so it's
the video
finished.
for that. Yes, it's done. It's done. And the book is called Trusting Your Foundation. The book is called Trusting Your Foundation, a primer on non-linear spirituality and practice. Non-linear, because over and over in this conversation, for instance, we've thought that there's a way to get there. What's the methodology? How do I do it? Who, what, where, when, why, how? Who, what, where, when, why, how? The conscious mind wants to know. And over and over and over, the reason why I'm just the subtitles and non-linear spirituality and practice. Well, how do you practice something that is non-linear? Like, there's nowhere to go.
I look forward to reading it. I'd love to
Right?
have you on the
Yeah.
podcast again after reading it because I'm sure it's going to be very interesting and
It's
illuminating.
it's an entrainment. I will say that it is an entrainment. It is a what did you call the linguistic practice where you're drilling, drilling? Yes, it's very much a book of just the perpetual invitation, much like this conversation, using my language, using words as I find myself speaking words in this moment that invite us to know who we are.
Love
And
it.
so it's that conversation just in book form, And I'm a little bit of a I'm silly because reality is there are certain parts of the book, there are certain chapters that are extremely philosophical and extremely intellectual. And I mean, but again, they are and they aren't. A lot of people's conscious minds think that we need to talk about information theory and digital physics and quantum mechanics and things like this and Western philosophy. We think that we need to talk about these things in order to get there. I even talk about in the book about the fact that I thought that I needed that at one point in my journey. There's no journey. There's no journey. And so here we are. And yes, thank you so much, Venus. The book is coming out very soon. I would love for people to get on my mailing list. And just follow me on social media. I'm on, can I go ahead and do that part, the plug? I'm gonna go ahead
Yeah,
and do
of
that.
course, yeah.
Isn't that funny? I asked permission. I don't need your permission.
That's
I'm gonna
already kind of like one of the questions I ask. Where can people find?
I'm on most of the platforms except for Twitter. I'm on all the platforms, the basic, the big five except for Twitter. And yeah, the best way to sort of come into my world, so to speak, that's marketing language for you, come into my world is connorkeys.com. That's connerkeys.com, connorkeys.com. And you can actually do something there called signing up for the mirror. You can sign up for the mirror, and once you it's basically just your email address, so you sign up for the mailing list. You've also signed up for the mirror, and the mirror is where you can find all of my interviews, articles, some webinars that I've given, and guided meditations and all kind of stuff. It's like a little it's a big bag of Connor in what we call the mirror. So yeah, I think that's it.
Amazing. So thank you so much for this wonderful interview. I'm very
You
grateful.
are so welcome, Venus. I have enjoyed this tremendously. You really are a You're delightfully serious. You know what I mean? You're delightfully serious in the way, like you are the part of you which knows that it knows is in such strong relation with the part of you that thinks that it needs to know more. Like invites us into a way of talking about these things that I think is deep. I think it's very deep and it's beautiful. You've asked me some questions that I've never been asked in this conversation. So and I am great. I am tremendously grateful for that, to be asked questions in ways that I haven't quite been invited to explain what's what I think is going on. So
Great.
thank you. Thank you so much for that.
The book I'm reading now is The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment by Eckhart Tolle. I've had this book on my to-read list for a very, very long time, but there was something kind of stopping me from pressing the buy now button. I'm not sure what that was. I heard so many people speak highly about this book, and many people have told me that this was the book that triggered, in a good way, sparked their spiritual awakening. So it's very intriguing, to say the least. But I've seen interviews with Eckhart Tolle, and I just didn't really connect with him. I found his way of explaining just didn't really vibe with me, and I guess for that reason, I was kind of put off the book. And also, when I see a book is so popular, that tends to put me off as well. But I guess the timing is always right. And I did, I posted, I made a post on LinkedIn about what is the book that changed your life. And within 24 hours, I had several recommendations of The Power of Now. And I've also had many guests on this podcast who have recommended this book to me. And now it seems to be the right time to read it, thanks to my new enlightened vision of life, thanks to speaking with Connor Keyes, all about unity consciousness. And so that's really kind of made me more intrigued about the power of now. It's not just about surrendering to the present moment, but it's also about the connectedness in life, which seems very appropriate. So I can kind of stay in the space of understanding the illusion of separation, which sounds very out there, but it's something that I am starting to embody more and more. I've only just started reading this book, so I now have a lot of books on my list to read, and I'm kind of liking it so far. And many people I know have read it in about a day, but I don't want to read it too quickly. I think it's simple to read, but I think the ideas can be quite heavy, not in a bad way, but kind of quite deep and profound. So I don't want to rush it by any means. But I'm going to read a little extract to you, which is kind of aligned with the topic of today. The word enlightenment conjures up the idea of some superhuman accomplishment, and the ego likes to keep it that way. But it is simply your natural state of felt oneness with being. It is a state of connectedness with something immeasurable and indestructible, something that, almost paradoxically, is essentially you, and yet it is much greater than you. It is finding your true nature beyond name and form. The inability to feel this connectedness gives rise to the illusion of separation from yourself and from the world around you. You then perceive yourself, consciously or unconsciously, as an isolated fragment. Fear arises, and conflict within and without becomes the norm. Wow, I love that. I'm really excited to advance in these pages. And there's also some symbols in the book which mean that you should stop and just reflect on what is said. I think sometimes when we read, I don't know about you, but I tend to. It gets to a point where I'm just looking at words and I'm not quite absorbing the message. So this is going to help me to kind of slow down, be present, and hopefully I'll become a unity consciousness pro at the end of it, because I really want to embody this way of thinking and not have not, not because I feel right now that I'm kind of training myself to think like that. But it's something that I think is going to be is has been hugely beneficial to me so far, and I hope it continues to be that way. And on the blurb of this book, it says, the power of now can transform your thinking, the result, more joy right now. And that's a quote from Oprah Winfrey. So that's definitely alluring, to say the least. Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now is the best-selling spiritual book of the last 20 years and continues to be embraced by millions of readers around the world. To make the journey into the now, we will need to leave our analytical mind and its false created self, the ego, behind. Although the journey is challenging, Eckhart Tolle offers simple language and a question and answer format to show us how to silence our thoughts and create a liberated life. Surrender to the present moment, where problems do not exist. It is here we find our joy, are able to embrace our true selves, and discover that we are already complete and perfect. If we are able to be fully present and take each step into the now, we will be opening ourselves to the transforming experience of the power of now. Yeah, I definitely think it's important to be present as much as possible. And I think when we think of the past, we can be filled with regret, and then future can fill us with anxiety or even hope sometimes. It's not always such a bad thing to think about the future. But when I think about now, I think about all the blessings in my life. Like, for example, right now, I'm still in my pajamas. It's 10 to 2 and on a Friday. And I just love the fact that I get to create this podcast and share my thoughts with you, and also to speak to fantastic people like the guests I have on here. And I'm just feeling like a lot of peace in the lifestyle that I have created for myself. I remember years ago, I used to get up in the morning and have an alarm and rush my breakfast and rush to the metro thinking, oh my God, I'm late again. And this whole feeling of anxiety and almost guilt when I was going to arrive and hopefully try and avoid my bosses who would see me arrive late again, and thinking, oh my God, I'm not, you know, making the most or valuing the job I have. There's just all this feelings of guilt and just negativity starting my day. Whereas now that I've made such big changes to my lifestyle, I really cherish the moments of waking up slowly and having a really nice morning routine that involves a very nice breakfast and also reading a book. So it's kind of nice to make time for my own personal and spiritual growth in the mornings, and then have a schedule that I dictate and that I'm completely in control of. So I am really enjoying this present moment, sitting here speaking to my microphone, and hopefully this will become a good present moment for you as well. So that is the book I'm reading now, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Now it's time to slow things down as we prepare for this episode's guided affirmations meditation. It's probably not a good idea to listen to this while driving or operating machinery. Instead, take a break from whatever you're doing, get comfortable, take a deep breath, and enjoy. existence, sung by every living being. I embrace unity consciousness. I am one with the universe. Love and compassion flow through me. I am a thread in the tapestry of unity, woven with love. Through unity, I find peace, harmony, and connection. I am connected to universal energy, embracing unity consciousness. Resonate with the harmony of the cosmos. I embrace unity consciousness. I am one with the universe. Love and compassion flow through me. I promote unity through my thoughts, words, and actions. I recognize my oneness with all beings. Within me lies the divine essence that unites us all. My awareness expands beyond individuality. Unity consciousness. I am one with the universe. Love and compassion flow through me. I am merging with the collective consciousness. I honor the interconnectedness of life. I celebrate the beauty of diversity while acknowledging our underlying unity. I am a conduit of peace and understanding. I embrace unity consciousness.
Do you want to upgrade your life? If so, check out my free meditation, my Life Upgrade Meditation. This meditation is very powerful. It contains 100 very powerful affirmations that correspond to the 12 areas of life from the Wheel of Life. And those areas include things like money, professional career, friends, family, relationships, sexuality, personal development, contribution to society, home environment, and much more. If you're curious about this very powerful transformative meditation, then check out the link in the show notes. And if you haven't got the show notes at hand, then the link is bit.ly/life, capital L-I-F-E, hyphen, capital U, P, G, R, A, D, E, upgrade, hyphen, meditation with a capital M. The link is also in the show notes. So if you would like to upgrade your life, check out my free Life Upgrade meditation.
To find out more about me and my orgasmic lifestyle, visit venusohara.org or follow me on Instagram at instagram.com/venusohara. Make sure to search for the Orgasmic Lifestyle Podcast by Venus O'Hara in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found.
make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Thanks for listening. Have an orgasmic week and make sure every day is a climax.